Morokeni, Kapione. A very good morning to you, Namibia. Good morning, my dear listeners. It's a very beautiful morning. It's a Wednesday morning. How are you doing this morning? And where are you listening us from? Welcome. So welcome to your favorite radio station, your favorite 24 hours talk radio stations, Eagle FM. So it's about 8 o'clock. It's right at the on the dot, right up the cop. Yeah. So thanks for joining us. It's always a pleasure having you. And thank you, David, for handing over the mic on this side of the world. So we're coming to you live from the, I nearly said from Ongwediva, from Ondangwa, from the Ondangwa studio. And so it's really a pleasure being in your company this morning. As always, it's always a pleasure being in your company. And thank you for choosing being with us at this point in time. So, yeah, my name is Mike Oshaveli, and this is Unpacking the Day. So welcome to Unpacking the Day, your daily dose of what is really going on in terms of business, economic, and political news. So every weekday, we come through the noise, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, trends, and numbers that are actually making headlines in Namibia and around the world. So we keep it clear and asking the question that matter and giving you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segment don't necessarily reflect those of Eagle FM. So we are here to unpack what others are saying and spark meaningful conversation so that you, the listener, and, you know, so you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your space to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of the stories. All right. So 8:02, it's our time. And welcome if you just joining us. So as usual, we go back into time. We go back into time and look at what happened on this day in Africa. So good morning and welcome to On This Day in Africa, wherever you're listening us from in this great continent of ours, called Mother Africa. So today we travel back to the 10th of June, 1980, a day that became an important moment in South Africa's fight against apartheid. So while now imprisoned on Robben Island, Nelson Mandela managed to send a message to the outside world. Now, the statement was published by the African National Congress and called on South Africans to stand together against apartheid. At the time, this was at a time when many activists were jailed, exiled, and silenced. And then Mandela's words gave hope and renewed determination to those fighting for freedom. Now, the message came just a few years after the 1976 Soweto uprising, when students took to the street and protest against apartheid education policies. Now, Mandela's call for unity helped strengthen the liberation movement both inside South Africa and abroad. So it also increased international pressure on the apartheid government. So, and fast forward to the 10th June in 1990, another historic moment unfolded when legendary South African singer and activist Miriam Makeba, affectionately known as Mama Africa, returned home after spending 31 years in exile. So her return symbolized a new chapter for South Africa as apartheid began to crumble, really. And on the very same day, the government of F.W. de Klerk lifted the nationwide state of emergency, making another major step toward democracy and reconciliations. Now, moving to a more recent history, that was just a year ago, 2 years ago, on the 10th of June 2024, brought tragedy actually to Malawi. The country's vice president, Saloso Chilima, you remember, and nine others lost their lives when their military aircraft crashed in Chikangawa forest. They were traveling to a state funeral. So the incident actually shocked the nation and prompted an outpouring of grief across Africa. And finally, every year on the 10th of June, the Republic of the Congo, the Republic of the Congo marks a Reconciliation Day. For them today, it's a Reconciliation Day. It is a day dedicated to promoting peace, unity, and healing after a period of political conflict and instability. So those are some of the key, key moments that shape Africa on this day, the 10th of June. So history reminds us that even in difficult times, maybe something that we should learn from. So even, and something we know about, okay? Even in difficult times, courage, unity, resilience can help change the course of a nation. So courage, unity, resilience can help change the course of a nation. So wherever we find ourselves as a country, this beautiful economic challenge that we are facing now. So courage, unity, and resilience can help change the course of a nation. All right. So that's our thought. No, that's on this day in Africa. So thanks for listening. All right. After this, we look at what is our thought for the day today.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, welcome back, and a very good morning to you. And here is your thought for the day this morning. So there's a simple saying that goes, live today for tomorrow, it will all be history. Live today for tomorrow, it will all be history. So what that really means is this, okay? Today is the only moment we can truly hold in our hands. The only moment. Yesterday is already gone, tomorrow has not arrived yet. So, but what we do right now is what will become our story later. Now, so don't wait for the perfect time. Eh? Don't wait for the perfect time to live, to act, you know, to do what is better. Do what is better. So, because one day everything you are going through right now, whatever you are going through right now, will just be a memory. Part of our history, part of your history. So the question is, when you look back, you know, when you look, will you be proud of what today became? Will you be proud of what today became? So as you go through your day today, make it count, okay? So that you will, one day you'll be proud of what today became, okay? Make it count. Speak kindly, do the work that matters. Especially do the work that matters. Take the step you have been delaying. You know, if there's something that you have been delaying, just take a step to do that. So, because before you know it, today will no longer be today. It will be history. So that's your thought for the day. So that's your thought today. And thanks for listening. All right. So good morning to you. If you're just joining us, I love having you. Don't go away. Eh? Love having you. I love your company. And hopefully, we're going to warm you up as we, it could be cold wherever you find yourself. We're going to warm up. We're going to warm you up with what we have for you on the agenda. First, what we have on the agenda is the Prime Minister that's official opening of the budget reform, budget reform rollout workshop that was in Windhoek. In the face of mounting geopolitical tensions and economic instability, the Namibian government now is launching a rigorous fiscal reform initiative. Now, this fiscal reform initiative is actually centered on outcome-based budgeting. The whole idea is actually then to safeguard the nation's 2026-2027 budget and ensure long-term sustainability. So we're going to look at that, what are the areas the Prime Minister focus on, and just for you to understand what, you know, where we're going. Money's there now. Let's start implementing, you know, but saying, well, not just, there are a few things that we need to talk about, okay? It's not get, you know, the whole thing. It's not going to be business as usual. So an outcome-based budgeting. What is that all about? So we're going to look at that. So, and yesterday I said we're going to come back to a story that we looked at yesterday, but we didn't really cover that much. So the organization? Inclusive and, I'm getting old. Inclusive and Sustainable Urban Development. Yeah, ISUD. Yeah. So Inclusive and Sustainable Urban Development Institute has proposed a 5 strategic pathway designed now to improve housing affordability and delivery for the Namibian low-income population. So we touched on 2 or maybe 1, I can't remember now. So there are other 5 strategic pathway. So I really want us to look at it, because whether if you are a lawmaker or a leader in your councillor or wherever you find yourself, as a leader anyway, and especially those, if we're talking about housing issues, I think they are very important. There are really, really important strategic pathways, if you call them that way, you know, that one can also have a look and said, maybe this is something that we need to do to follow, okay, or to implement, all right, or push, okay, as a government or as a local government, whatever the case may be. So we're going to get into that as well. So, and of course, you know what? Your participation is also part of the show. I'm hoping that you are unpacking with me and you will come through to air your opinion or your reaction to the topic we are talking about. All right, stay tuned. I'll be back in a sec.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikao shafasa na nana longe shifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongoti samwene. Anange shifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayaguro nirandi soma yoe yonge shifa yoe okupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma onarahe tatu imu. Datundatu heari hamano tano oniyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Yes, that's right. And if you want to advertise your business, if you want to advertise your business or an event, or you have an event, it doesn't matter what kind of event, a function or a workshop, a conference or a birthday. Yeah, we can do that for you. Maybe you're one of the big shots that you want to have your birthday actually, you know, live stream, for example, or broadcast it, you know, broadcast live. So what? Don't wait. Don't wait, man. Just contact us. Contact our office and we can do that for you. So contact our number, our office number, 0833-2888-400. So that's the number you can, you know, contact for your, yeah, advertisement needs. All right. So good morning. Good morning, Namibia. And you are tuned. You are tuned into Unpacking the Day. And I'm your host, Big Mike. I'll be with you until 10 o'clock when I will be handing over to Tate France in Windhoek. So we will hand over the mic now to Windhoek around 10. So, and please make sure that you tune in on that show as well. So, well, our Prime Minister, Eliankurare Elijah. So whichever you choose, Elijah or Elia, you know, Ngurale called together ministers, executive directors, and development partners in Windhoek this week. What was the agenda? The agenda is how Namibia is going to survive. And I mean survive. So how is Namibia going to survive, really? So, well, that's how I see it, you know. A nation budget, how are we going to survive a nation budget of nearly 88 billion in a world that is, you know, frankly, is on fire, you know, is absolutely on fire, you know. So our government has just introduced a national budget of 87.9 billion for the 26-27 financial year. The largest budget, I think the largest budget, you know, Namibia has ever had. Yeah, truly, I think so. Let me check that. Yeah, I think it's the largest budget Namibia has ever had. But there is one important thing to remember. One important thing to remember. This budget, now, this important thing, and I think this is what the Prime Minister now, what I'm saying is that what the Prime Minister actually alluded, or even not alluded, saying, this budget was prepared at the time when the global situation was far more stable than what it is today. You understand? So when it was prepared, even if it's the largest, you know, the largest budget Namibia has ever had, you know, remember then when it was prepared, we didn't have the global situation as we have them now. You understand? So there were more. The global situation was far more stable than it is today. Now, since then, tension in the Middle East, you know, have grown. Shipping routes, as we know, have come under pressure. So fuel prices have started rising again. So, and the cost of import, the cost of imported food is increasing as well. So, Namibia is closely connected now. We are closely connected to the global economy. So, when these problems affect the world, they also affect us. But remember what the Prime Minister tried to say here. It's a kind of like when we drop this budget. We didn't know that this is going to happen. Okay? That's when you read between the lines, he said, well, remember, when we draw up this, even if it's one of the largest budget Namibia has ever had, we didn't know that this was going to happen. All right? So, so you know the drift where it's going? Okay, so this morning now, we ask an important question. an important question, the question that you should be asking yourself as well. Is this budget strong enough to withstand now? Is it strong enough to withstand the economic challenges that may lie ahead? That is now the question that we should be asking. So is this, given now, as the Prime Minister now saying, okay, when we prepared this, we didn't know it, the global situation was far more stable, you know, than it is today. Okay, now, so we're looking at now the budget and asking, is it strong enough to withstand the economic challenges that may lie ahead, you know? And if it's not, no, seriously, and think about this. And if it is not, what will the impact be on ordinary Namibian? What would be the impact on ordinary Namibia? Read between the lines what the Prime Minister is saying. So you find this story. So on today's, the edition, the Eagle FM, not Eagle FM, the Villagers, the publication, Wednesday publication is out. But Wednesday edition is out. This is also a story that you can find making our front page. So do make sure that you subscribe. And if you're new and you're just, you know, joining us, you know, make sure that you subscribe to the Villager. And it's free. Okay, let me say that first so that you're kind of asking how much that will cost. No. It is free. All that, maybe it's the credit that you're going to use, okay? Might not be free. No, but it's free, all right? So do that. Do that now. I'm not going forward until you do that. Or what you need to do, just send your email and your name, you know, to this number, 081-241-44. 081, okay? 241-44. Good. You done? All right. Okay, let's go now. Now, let's put this in context a little bit, okay? Now, when the finance minister presented this budget, the global economy was relatively stable. Commodity prices were steady. Trade routes, as we're now complaining, were operating normally. The Strait of Hormuz was operating normally, not as what is going on now. And inflation was under control, but this have changed quickly. All right? This has changed quickly. The conflict in the Middle East has intensified. Shipping costs have increased. Oil prices are rising again and again. And as a result, many of the assumptions of which this budget was built are now being tested. You understand? So are now being tested, really. So, and I want you really to think like an economist. I'm thinking like a journalist. I'm just giving you, you know, you don't have to be an economist, but just think like an economist for a moment as we go through this, okay? And I'm helping you from a journalistic point of view, all right? Now, you know, as I said, as a result, many of the assumptions on which this budget was built is now being actually tested. So the Prime Minister, Mr. Ngurale, at the official opening of the budget reform rollout workshop this week, he gave a warning that Namibia is facing a critical moment. So, and take, when a Prime Minister told you that, take it seriously, you know, take it very, very seriously. So he said we're facing a critical moment. He pointed to now a rising inflation on import goods. So in his speech, higher fuel and food prices. All right? Who will be affected by those? Higher fuel and food prices. Weaker demand. There's now a weaker demand from international market, you know, in some of the commodities. So in some of our export, you know. So increasing shipping costs, you know, because of the international because of the global shocks and disruptions that we see. So all of these factors could slow. So what is he alluding to is that all of these factors could slow economic growth and put pressure on our government finance and put pressure on our budget. Okay? So I'm also helping you. Prime Minister, so I'm helping you here. No, seriously, Prime Minister, I'm helping you people to understand where we are. Seriously. I think I need to come and collect, you know, so we know each other. So I need to come and collect, Mr. Prime Minister. So, yeah, so because I'm helping you now, I'm helping you, you know, helping you to tell the people this is what is happening, okay? So in a way that you were not able to elaborate. Now, but what does this mean now for us when the Prime Minister actually sings like that, saying things that the reality is that Namibian imports, if you look at who we are, our country, the reality is that Namibia import much of what we use every day. Okay? We import almost everything that we use every day. Fuel, food, machinery that we use, medicine, even medicine. Yeah? So when it becomes more expensive now, when it becomes more expensive to move goods around the world, those extra costs do not stay at the harbor, okay? They don't stay at the harbor. They reach the truck. They reach the truck drivers that are delivering the product to the supermarket. They reach the farmer who need diesel to run equipment. You know, they reach a small business, you know, paying more for supplies. They reach families who suddenly find that basic grocery costs more than they did a few months ago. So, as I said, those extra costs don't stay at the harbor. They reach you. They reach your pocket. They reach your budget, your household budget. So now, the real question is not whether the global event affect Namibia, because they do, as we have seen. I think many of you have learned that now. No matter who you are, you don't need to be an economist anywhere to understand that. So we do. Now, the real question is whether our government is prepared to protect households. It's now rightly we're saying, okay, that whatever is happening in the world, it's going to affect your pocket. That's what we're saying, isn't it? Okay? It's going to affect the basic groceries costs that you're going to buy. So now the question is our government prepared to protect you, to protect households, to protect business from the worst effect of these global economic shocks? That's the question. So, and listening to the, you know, so now that's where now we fit in. What is the Prime Minister saying? How are we going now? Is the government prepared to protect us, especially us, the consumers, and the business owners, small business owners as well? Are they prepared to protect us from the worst effect of these global economic shocks? Are they? Okay. So, we're going to look at this when we come back after this. Stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn.
Great news! Import just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
No. All right, welcome back. 30 minutes past the hour of 8. You know one thing that I love talking about? Do you know one thing? Two things that I always said there. Two things that I always focus here. What are those things? Numbers. Okay? One is numbers. I always tell you numbers don't lie. The other one is what? Follow the mullah. Follow the money. All right? So follow the money. Now, the Prime Minister, you know, let's look at some of the things that the Prime Minister haven't talked about. All right? So maybe talked about, but how does this fit into where we are when we talk about, are the government really prepared, you know, to protect us from this war's effect of these global economic shocks? Now, but there are other challenges. Eh? There are other challenges. So let's talk about the numbers first. Okay? Well, and we're not talking that kind of numbers that you know, we're talking about the kind that you should make, that should make us all pay attention. And I want you to pay attention. Now, when this budget was presented, Namibia's public debt stood at 174.6 billion. You know what is the budget? The budget is about 87.9. Your debt is stood at 174.6 billion. You know, in terms of what is that? Now, first of all, this 176.6 billion, that is equal to 65.2% of the economy, of the country's economy. That's GDP, okay? So 65.2% of the country's economy, that's equal to that. GDP, your country's, our country's GDP. Now, let's put that simple. Okay, so that you can understand. Okay, think of it this way. Now, for every dollar's worth of good and service our economy produce, okay, listen here. For every dollar, for every dollar's worth of goods and services our economy produces, more than 65 cents is already owed to lenders. So you have a dollar worth of goods and services our economy produces. More than 65, that's what we're talking about, 65.2%. More than 65 cents is already owed to lenders. So what are you left up with? Eh? Then there's a budget deficit, okay? This is now that budget deficit. It is projected at 5.5% of GDP this year. 5.5% of GDP this year. So in simple terms, the government, when we talk about it, it's saying, in simple terms is this, guys. The government is spending more money than it is bringing in. So that's what simply it means. So the government is spending more money than it's bringing in. So the difference has to be now, you know, has to be covered through borrowing. You understand? The gap, the difference has to be, of course, it has to be covered through borrowing. Do you see where we are? Now, think about it like, okay, to make it simple, think about it like a household budget, okay? If you earn, let's say, if you earn a 10,000 a month, you earn a 10,000 a month, but you spend a 10,550, for example, you are running a deficit. So you have to borrow money to make up the shortfall. So if you keep it, now, if you keep doing that month after month, your debt keep growing. Your debt keep growing. The same principle then applies to country, to the country. It applies to it applies to where we are. So government say it want to reduce now the deficit. So that's what now the government, that's what now the prime minister was talking about. We want to reduce the deficit from 5.5% to 3.3% by 2028-2029 financial year. That is the goal. Now, to achieve it, the government estimate it must save. Now, to achieve that, the government estimate that it must save about 2.3 billion every year over the next 3 years. Save about 2.3 billion every year over the next 3 years. That's a huge amount of money. You know that money, you know, some even ministry don't even, the budget of some ministry is not even that, it's not that even that much. Yeah. Now, finding saving of 2.3 billion a year. it's not as simple as, it's not as simple as skipping a few expenses. We have to save, you know. It could mean cutting. Now, what does it mean? What does it mean now? When you hear this now, okay, that we have to save. What does it mean? It mean that it could mean cutting back on certain program, isn't it? With that budget we have, it could be whatever budget we're gonna have. So it could be the cutting back on certain program. It could mean reducing spending in some areas. That's what it means. Or finding a way, like what the president have been saying, maximize with the small what we have. I'm just paraphrasing there. So finding ways to operate more efficiently. Okay? So the challenge is that the governments around, when you look at the government around, seriously, around the world, for example, not just maybe in Africa, but around the world, they often struggle to achieve saving of this scale. They struggle to achieve that kind of saving. Now, here's the question we all should be asking. Has Namibia successful, has Namibia successfully achieved a saving target of this size before? Have we done that? Well, doesn't mean there's no first time, but given where we are, look at all the things that we said earlier. And if not, why should we believe this time will be different? Tell us, why should we believe that it's going to be different? Isn't this just a rhetoric that we used to? And as I said, the reality is that we have heard ambitious fiscal promises before. We have seen spending exceeding original plans. We have seen project delayed or funds redirected, you know. And meanwhile, public debt has continued to rise. It's right in our face. Yeah? The evidence is there, right in our face. Well, now, get me right here now, okay? That does not mean the current plan cannot work, okay? So I'm not saying the current plan cannot work. Do you understand? Okay? I'm not saying that at all. But it does mean that success will depend on something more than good intentions. All right? You get my point. So, good intention will not bring success. It does mean more. Okay? It will require discipline, which also the Prime Minister talked about. It required tough decisions. All right? And what is that? A consistent follow through over the next several years. A consistent you know, follow through. Implementation. That's what it means. Implement whatever now you're saying, this is the framework, this is the initiative that we need. Implementation. If not, as we have seen over and over, as I said, good intention doesn't bring success. All right? But implementation does. Okay, so now, so yeah, that's one area. So now, but this is where now things get interesting, okay? This is where now things get interesting. Government is not only talking about cutting costs here. It also trying to change the way it measures success. This is a very interesting part. And now, the new approach, which is actually good, the new approach is called outcome-based budgeting. Outcome-based budgeting. So when I'm doing this, I kind of feel like I'm actually doing this for God. I'm kind of like, you know, I started thinking, okay, So I'm explaining things for the government, which they should be explaining. So it's called outcome-based budgeting, and it will be tested. This now will be tested in 8 major ministries from the second quarter of 2026. So that's what is that was indicated. Now, these 8 ministries are now under the spotlight. There will be some ministry that will be under the spotlight. So you have the Ministry of Education, Ministry of Health, Ministry of Home Affairs, Ministry of Agriculture, Ministry of Finance, Industrialization, Trade Industrialization, Environment, and Work and Transport. Now, these 8 ministries, these are some of the biggest spending ministries in the government. So these are some of the big spending, you know, ministry in the government. So their decision affect, as you know, their decision actually affect the quality of schools, hospitals, roads, public service, water supply, and many, many other parts of our everyday life. Okay? So maybe that's why the spotlight is on them. So the idea is this. The idea behind the reform is very simple, okay? So, which is actually good. Now, for years, if you look at where we're coming from, for years, government departments have often been judged by how much money they spent, okay? They're often judged by how much money they spent. Now, the focus is supposed to shift, okay? It's shifting now to what that spending actually achieves. Eh? What does the spending achieve? That's now the focus. Okay? So in other words, hospitals should not be judged by the size of its budget. It should be judged by whether patients receive better care. So given you this much money, have we seen improvement in terms of how patients have been, you know, are patients receiving better care? A school should not be judged by how much it spent. Kind of like this is how much a school spent. That's said from previously as how this was the judgment. So a school now should be judged by how much it spent. It should be judged by whether learners are getting a quality education. So that is the new focus. And on paper, it sounds like a common sense. Eh? It sounds like this is a common sense, you know, for maybe someone looking at this, that, well, this revolutionary, you know, we're going a different road. That's what it should be, actually. You know, that's how it should be. I don't see that as a new focus. It was supposed to be already. But then it also raises some important questions. Now, we're talking about result. What result will be measured? So there must be the KIP, you know, key indicator, you know, performance, key indicator performance, okay? So there must be some indicators so that you and I can also see, okay, they did this, they did that. There must be some indicators, key performing indicators. So what result will be measured? We should be able to see. It should not say, oh, we will have our eyes on this, but on what? Now, who decides whether a ministry has succeeded or failed? It's only when you know what they need, what performance should be, what are the key objectives, what are the targets that need to be reached. When you don't have that, you cannot be able to say, well, the ministry has failed. What was the target? And what happened when the targets are not met? So those should be also there. We also should now be able to say, so that we're going to call on the head of somebody. All right? So that at the end of that, we're going to call on someone's head. We will say, look, and you, as a president, minister, whatever, everyone can be able to see, look, this person hasn't performed. And this was the objectives. This were the target. And he hasn't met them. Let them go from the ED, to the deputy minister, to whoever. Let them go. Yeah. There must be penalties or some consequences. And so now that's why I said this is where now things become a little bit more complicated. You understand? It's nice to say, this is what we're going to do, but okay, how do we know when this is happening? So measuring real outcome requires a reliable data. Okay? You require a reliable data. Guys, when I say it, numbers don't lie. I mean it. it requires reliable data, honest reporting. Would actually be able to, people would be, will they be able to report honestly, for example? Strong accountability. That's a word. Strong accountability. Without those things, reliable data, honest reporting, and accountability. Without these things, it becomes difficult to know whether government programs are truly making a difference. Believe you me. And we have seen the examples. So many Namibians have seen examples where large amount of money was spent, but the results were disappointing. So we have seen infrastructure project delayed for years. We have seen schools built, but lack enough teachers. We have seen clinics opened, but struggling with shortage of medicines and equipment. So the debate is not really about whether outcome-based budgeting is a good idea. That's actually not the debate. That's a good idea. Most people would agree that it is. I agree that it is. Now, the real question is whether government have the system, something that we always talk here. We were even talking it with Kwedi yesterday. So whether government has the system, that's not the only thing. The other thing actually the Prime Minister also mentioned quite a lot is the discipline. Does the government have the system, has the discipline, and maybe the most important thing actually, political will to make it work. When I'm talking political will, I'm not just talking the president himself or herself. I'm talking about through every structure. I think we should replace this whole question of political will with the political competency. Seriously, so that's also very important. Do they have political competency? Whether that makes sense anyway. So having political competence. But yeah, politically, are you competent? Will ministry be held accountable when they fail to deliver? We don't see that in Africa. Most of the time in Africa. Or will this become another well-intentioned reform that generate excitement at launch, like at the workshop, only to lose momentum once the spotlight moves elsewhere. And that's the gamble Namibia is now taking, okay? So what do you think? What is your take? There are a few things still coming, but you are welcome to come through. If there's something caught your eye, caught your ear, not caught your eye. You know, something caught your attention. Yeah, that's a better word. So caught your attention and you want to react to that. Now you can come through. I've covered quite a number of things that coming from that. Yeah, so there are still things that we're going to look at. So as we go on. So yeah. 08333, we are in Ondangwa, 08333-66091, 08333-66091. So you can come through and react to any of what we have talked, what we have discussed so far. So, yeah. So what do you think? What is your take on some of this? All right. So we'll continue, but let's have a quick break.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No. All right. Welcome back. Our time is about 51 minutes past the hour of 8. Okay. We get someone knocking at the door. You change your mind? Don't change your mind. Don't change your mind. Just come through again. So there was someone knocking on my door and then he changed his mind or her mind. I wouldn't mind if it's a she. So yeah, I would love a she to come through. Where are you, the she's? You are now, running the country. So we should be having actually woman calling now. This is your, they said, well, this is our time. Please. A very good morning to you, man.
Good day, familia.
Good morning.
I've not changed my mind. I'm just letting the app go on so I can come in.
I'm okay. Speak up a little bit. I didn't hear you well.
I'm saying I've not I give up. I was just letting the app to go on so I can come in.
Oh yeah, no. You're welcome. Yeah. That's good. Thanks for coming through. Yeah.
All right. So yesterday you say we're gonna proceed with our.
Yeah. No. I indicated at the beginning of the show that after this we will continue with what we were talking about yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah. I just want also to add on that of yesterday. We didn't elaborate it enough.
Yeah.
So when we talk about the development, the economy for the country, it doesn't mean all of us should work for the government. And now we think our government did not do enough when it comes to houses. You know? Yeah. Now for me, to be part of this, the system, I should, if I have a house, even those is not like expensive houses, but because we see like any NMCE, it's not for the poor. Because if you don't work, you won't qualify to get the house in the NHEE. So even though the houses are very, very expensive, not affordable for the people who are living in shacks. Now the number you gave yesterday to say it, so how many houses have been the government already built for the poor? It's not even, I don't know how many, I cannot even count how many houses. I never even see. When we go to the issue of Shack Dweller Federations, it's all in Oshakati, which are going on, in Rundu, in going on, and they jump Vindu, they go to Rehoboth. Why? Why not Vindu? Because I think there's still we have state captures in Vindu.
Yeah.
Just why the people that they don't allow Shack Dwellers to go on in Vindu. Because they're gonna lose money, but in doing so, you already declining the economy of the country. Because if I don't have water to pay, I don't have electricity to pay. So what I'm what I really doesn't mean like So meaning like you are really putting your economy to go down because my contribution of the water and electricity already a lot for the economy of my country. Now you find yourself, you are in the shake for 20 years. Now you come to the radio, you hear somebody saying, no, we have numbers which are we have houses which are the government building for the poor. But that person who hears about that issue, brother, he can even pour you with the hot water. Because it's really a painful situation. Just imagine somebody, you know, you don't have a proper toilet, you don't have a proper water, you don't sleep well, you have a lot of noise. We even when come to the time of examination of the kids, yeah. There's no proper electricity. The kids doesn't even study well. You have a stress of the water, stress of the electricity, stress of the toilet. You have a running stomach. You go to a toilet. You are not releasing yourself in the proper manner. Because somebody is knocking you to come out because you guys are having the same problem. You know, really, our government needs to push up the issue. But I was happy when the president said that she will look at the issue of the Shark Dollar Federation, how these things work, and what can be done there. Yeah. It's very easy, very simple, very simple. If the government put the tools on the Shark Dollar Federation, to the cultivators, they put just a few money, some simple money. That system already will support the people who cannot afford to have a house. At least to own the house.
Yeah. Let's also add that. Let's also come to that after this as well. So if I finish this and then we cover that as well. So you are most welcome still to contribute later on. All right.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you, my brother.
All right. Yeah. We're looking at some of the aspects that are coming out of the Prime Minister's speech during the workshop. Yeah. So yeah, and this next part I think is extremely important. Okay, it's extremely important. The Prime Minister delivered a clear warning. Money set aside for development projects should no longer be used to cover everyday government expenses. All right? Money set aside for the development project should no longer be used to cover everyday government expenses. Now, his message was simple. When money meant to build, when money meant for building schools, roads, water system, hospitals, or digital infrastructure nowadays. So when it's spent elsewhere, the country pays a price. So that's what he says. When it's actually spent elsewhere, the country pay a price. And that price is often passed on to the future generation through a slower, through a slower development and through a fewer opportunities. Because that money that was supposed to do that, you divert it to something else. So, very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
You know what? Yes, Big Mike.
Very good morning. How are you, man?
I'm okay, man. How are you?
I'm all right.
Yeah.
So,
Mike.
Yeah.
When it comes to the budget, listen. I think, Mike, the problem here is not about like we cannot turn around the what we are going through, but the problem is that we go and borrow money, which we are using for our stomach feeding, which is a problem.
So, you know what?
Yeah, I
understand your point. We found ourselves where that's what we need to do. Do you understand that? So we find ourselves now where that is actually what we need to do.
But we cannot really move around to see how we are going to survive without us going to
There is, but we're not doing it. We're talking about diversity that I was talking. We're talking about now not spending the money, not diverting money meant for development into day-to-day, you know?
The activity, yeah.
Exactly. So that are the issues.
Yeah, but for me, the way I'm looking at this question is where we are putting ourselves, is that we get borrow money even just to buy luxury cars. Just imagine. If, like now, what happened to recently for us to buy Land Cruisers? Those products which you are buying.
But basically, when you look at this also, then this is very important, is that on the paper, when we borrow money, we're not borrowing money to buy a Land Cruiser. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
On the paper, when we borrow money, you know, but it's actually how we divert the priority that we have on the paper into things like that.
So things that, that's the thing. It's where I say that is a problem.
Yeah.
You see, even last time we are talking about even the way we are bringing back in Namibia. And we spent $20 million for feasibility study. And the actual money with the youth.
And actually spend money on a speed hamper on where?
That one is a laughable, but the way I'm looking at it again, guys, why should we spend money? We know that it's coming for temblers. Why you cannot just educate people for now that we are going to put up the bridge?
Because you couldn't spend that money somewhere else, really?
Look. The thing is that even the way he's talking about the minister, he's saying these things are just temporary. I know, guys, you are even talking about it in the social media, but guys, sometimes you just have to organize our traffic enforcement. They say educate those people who are working at Chinatown, which are passing this in the North Industry area, where they bend land by the car. Then we are working on designing the bridge for them to cross over. Because the moment even like now you are putting out, you are spending money and unnecessary thing. And again, those things are not, you are not going to need it.
Yeah.
Again, you are going to put up a bridge. What does help? That's already money wasted. That's what I'm saying in this country. If we, the way you're saying we must not have a, there must be accountability. I think there must be a consequence.
We must not talk about political will anymore. We must talk about political competency. You know?
Yeah, competence is a consequence when you are done. Absolutely something wrong. There must be a follow up. Maybe deduct even your salary monthly, which are going to replace those to speed number which we put up. Because remember one thing that these things are you saying it's temporary, but help. Now other people are losing their property because remember if they
now you're right. You were breaking up a little bit, Mandume? You are broken up. I don't know what happened. You have a ghost in your phone. It sounds like a ghost. You know? So as we know, you know, government spending generally fall in two categories. Yes.
So I don't know.
You were having a
network or something.
You were having a ghost in your phone, you know.
No, I think maybe they are trying to. You know, these days they are able to trace numbers and so on. But the thing is for Mike, there has to be. There must be accountability everywhere.
Yeah.
Because if you are talking about the political will, it's not working for when it comes to our economy.
Yeah.
Because this is just a person who is willing. If he's not willing, what is then? there must be a consequence for him to be followed up or her. But what the Prime Minister is saying is good, that if the money are intended to do something, don't use it. Don't take it to use it for another. Yeah. Unless,
but he shouldn't stop there. He should have gone to say, this is what we're going to do to you. Yeah,
exactly. That's what I want to hear.
That if the money actually was meant for this, and we find to you that you actually use it for something else, you are gone. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, this is exactly. And that is what we need.
That's what I want to hear.
Because the moment you just speech of speech, people they don't take it seriously. I'm telling you. Remember the other time when they say no. I like Honorable Sangwaza, what he's doing in the ministry. Because if he means something, he says something, then you already know that there's something coming up.
Yeah, his word is followed by action. Yeah.
Exactly. That is what we need from our Prime Minister also.
Yeah.
Because of talking, to become a sweet talker. Yeah. With no action. And it's what has been doing, landing this country for down. That's why we find ourselves in that mess where we are.
Let's give it a time. This whole question of budget focus, you know, and see whether they will really live it up to what they're saying. It sounds good, and we want to see whether that's really going to happen. Yeah, we will have our eyes on them. Yeah.
Exactly. What I want also is tangible results coming out of that. Because if we are just talking, like now, we are just talking, but next time is there, then we spend 7 billion. But it's just there, and the people are just talking. There's no action.
Yeah.
Look, I want, like, what the president done last time, visiting all those green schemes. Then you can find out. But this is supposed even to be done by the agriculture minister. If now president able to do that, okay, what is the job of agriculture minister then?
Yeah.
And this is a thing which I say, we need people. If you are not competent, my friend, they must show you the door to your house.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of people, and now the way we find ourselves, like now, where the world is facing a lot of challenges. If you look what is happening currently, where oil is going up every day, the foodstuff is going up, and the electricity also to increase. Now the salary is still the same. And who is going to suffer? It's us.
Yeah.
The consumers. Now, if you are not talking about even like, now remember, last time I'm happy that the president, even somewhere in Mubongo, what we are producing the what oats which are making bread. Okay, where's the factory which are producing the flowers? Because we cannot just rely on the trucks are coming from South Africa. There must be a tangible result action which you can see and touch. But if you are just talking in sake of talking, like no, if this thing are meant for the development, don't touch it, but there's no consequence. People, they will do business as usual the way they used to.
Yeah.
Yeah, but seriously, I think there must be a change.
It will be business as usual.
Yeah, exactly. But if there's a consequence, like if you touch this, then that, a friend, the consequence will become following you. Either you go or you take your salary of that month.
Yeah. And make one person as an example.
Example of others. Yeah. It's supposed to be like that.
Make one person as an example, be like that. So that everybody can say, oh, my dear, I'm going to long go. You know.
Look, we are Mike.
The president have done that slowly by slowly. There has been.
But now it's slowing down. She slowed down now. You can see. Maybe she did it on her favor. When she done in the first, the minister of what? Minister of Mine, Now we heard a lot of rumors around, flying around and everything. Even this, if you look even the veto which are supplying us oil, if we have NAMCO, which you are sidelining as a parasite of a government, now what does it tell you in the Minister of Energy? Something is already not going on, not going well. It is not going to end up very well, the way I'm seeing it in that ministry. But things need to be changed. If you are saying the business cannot be a business as usual, then we must see that there's a difference,
yeah,
the way things are used to be done. But if we are continuing it the way we are, there's nothing changing.
All right, man.
Anyway, Michael, let me give other people a chance.
Okay, great, man. Thanks for coming, Julia.
Cheers.
Our 333-66091. Our 333-66091. Yeah, I was saying, you know, what was I saying? That government actually spending generally fall in two categories, as we know. We have the development, you know, spending. We have the development spending. This is money used now to build things like things that benefiting, you know, benefit people for years to come, not just, you know, like salaries and things like that. So things like road, schools, clinic, water pipes or something, and communication networks. So, and think of it as an investing, you know, in Namibia's future. And then the second is the operational spending, where, and this covers now the day-to-day running of government, salaries, office expenses, you know, travel costs, maintenance, you know, and other and other routine activities. So these expenses are necessary because that's what keeps the government running. So they do not create, but they do not create a new infrastructure, for example. All right. So the concern is that over the years, money intended for development project has sometimes been redirected now to cover the operational costs. So, and that could mean now money originally budgeted to build a clinic, improve a road, or install a new water system end up being used by administrative expenses instead. So now the project is delayed, scaled down, and sometimes never completed at all. So because the money has been redirected. And when that happened, it is ordinary citizens who are actually impacted. So, and this is what the Prime Minister is actually, you know, warning. So the community waiting for a new school continues to struggle with overcrowded classroom because the money had been redirected. The town waiting for a road repair continues to deal with damaged infrastructure because the money has been redirected. So the village waiting for a borehole continues to face water shortages. So because of that. So, and that's why this issue matter really. So now here's the question for us, for you. How many projects, for example, maybe in your community, have been promised but never completed? How many roads still need repairs? How many schools still need classrooms? How many communities are still waiting for the reliable water in your community? And it could some, and it could, eh? It could some of these days, some of these delays, you know, some of these delays could be linked to money that was originally set aside for development, but later spent on something else. So, and this is the emphasis now the Prime Minister actually, you know, talking about. All right? So, and the other question also that comes in is the question of accountability. We're just talking about it now. The Prime Minister has promised that the Ministry of Finance and a National Planning Commission will closely monitor these new reforms. All right? He says they will track progress, measure performance, and report publicly. Okay? Minister, I'm not quoting you outside of what you said. Report publicly on whether ministries are following the new rules. Okay? So he also warned accounting officers. Okay? He also warned, because they were all there, accounting officers and executive director, their performances will be monitored and assessed. So as I said, it's all good when you're there then telling them, hey, guys, we watch you, but you better watch them. And where the ministry also failed to deliver. So they will watch, you know, where the ministry failed to deliver, government say it is prepared to step in. They will step in. So, yeah, and those are strong and I think necessary commitment. Eh? They're very strong, but necessary commitment. But as I said, you know, as you said, but promises alone do not actually build roads. The roads that we're talking are in our towns. Eh? Promises alone do not actually ensure that the clinics have medicines. you understand? Promises alone do not actually make sure teachers are in classrooms, eh? Or that textbooks reach the school on time. Promises alone don't do that. The real test of this reform, in my opinion, and probably is what you're thinking as well. So the real test of this reform will not be what is written in a policy document. We have many of those. Eh? So it's not what is written in the policy document or discussed at the workshop. The real test will be what happens on the ground. That's what we're looking for. Eh? So 6 months from now, will these 8 ministries be able to show clear evidence that they are delivering better results? That's the question. Will the public be able to see those results for themselves? Are we able to see, we can see that. Will government push the report openly and transparently? And if a ministry failed to meet its target, will there be real consequences? Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking.
Yes, morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Yeah.
How is the morning so far?
No, it's good, good. Prime Minister, that cannot work.
Eh?
It cannot work.
It cannot work?
Because the money...
You're shouting like a prophet of doom, man.
So, if you are saying, you know, people are using up on their personal use, maybe that one is totally different. But remember when we were talking about the water bill,
yeah,
on the local authorities where the ministries, regional office and some district officer,
if they are not paying, they must just close it, you know.
No. The accumulating of that debt. It come from the open of the offices. Didn't come when the office is closed. So if you are now telling me that you give me 200 to run the ministry, and the day I end up overspending because of according to what is my job is.
Yeah.
So it's hard for you to say no. You cannot be using that money because of your hard work or the but it's not the overspend.
Yeah.
It's just that it's a demand of what I'm doing.
Yeah, so exactly. But the whole question is also whole question of priorities as well. You might have overspent. But then you spend it in very useless stuff. To something that not equally important compared to if you would have actually built a clinic or, you know, something else.
There are nothing that is not important to the ministry, whether it's a workshop, whether it's a field observation and all of that.
I think in terms of if I have this money, this much money, you know, how much, what do I need to prioritize given the money I have? Mm-hmm. You understand? I think that's what I mean. Yeah.
But on the look of the minister, the money is not enough.
Yeah, of course.
For them to running this, you cannot tell people like we have over $2 billion in our pocket that you can say, Namibia is a broke country. It doesn't have money.
Yeah, we are broke. It's a broke country.
So if you look at in the budget now, the 87.5 9, the spend of the government is about 81.3.
Yeah.
So the left in development money, that is 6.5.
Yeah, it's just about over six billion.
Yeah. How can you tell me that, no, we need to complete our mission? How can you completing with the 6 billion? Is what you want to tell me? No, you must withdraw that. That is not a statement to tell.
Yeah.
Unless you are saying we cannot approve new project because of we have a pending project without funds.
Yeah,
that's one I can understand. Yeah, but if you are telling me that no, the Minister of Safety and Security so are using up money because of sending police officers to go to street patrol and bush and what. So and now you are saying no, they cannot pay around.
Actually, you're bringing up another angle where when you're looking at this, well, you want to blame me for not performing, but you haven't given me tool to perform. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is what I'm saying. No, you cannot tell me people like that.
Yeah.
No, unless I don't know what you are doing. If you give your child $20 to go to school, for buying a pen, and then the kid says, no, I used to have $5. My friend, we're having a group contribution, so I end up now putting $5 in so that we can eat together. It's not a health problem, that one. It's a parent's problem because they didn't even look at that. There are a period of de-socializing the school. So that is the same way we are having in these ministries. You cannot tell in ministries that, you know, because the new activity coming, don't use the money.
Mm.
But that is our duty to do. We are preventing that. Even the Ministry of Health, they can do those all things. Even the Ministry of Immigration, all of the ministries, they can something can come up anytime, and then they're using up the money that we're supposed to be do something else.
So when you're talking to executive. When you are talking now to executives, how much politics comes into it? But what I'm asking is this: do I need to be political rather than really, you know, realistic on what needs to be done?
You know, people like Prime Minister now. It's not in the cut of experience or something like that. It's on the cut of the politics that our party needed to perform better. But most of the ETs, so they are there because of the experience that they have, they've been in the administration or been in the system for quite long.
Yeah.
So they have to do that. And some of these guys, they are good on mathematics even. Because they know that, you know, we cannot buying something that is not useful to us. So we need something that is can bring us a good fruit to report. You understand? And you now, in your office as a prime minister, you are viewing that you are just expecting to keeping people health in the Ministry of Health. But you don't look at how the prevention of those outbreak of diseases that are coming in.
Mm.
So I have to put up my investigation, which is now epidemiologist. So that's needing a lot of money to do, or we're needing the new tools to do that, or we're needing a new. Yeah. So those are the type of things that I'm saying. No, this is not a good. Namibia is a broke country. Unless you are saying, let us get in the new project that can bring revenue in the country. That's another. It's a better way to say. Yeah, because don't blame those potholes that is surrounding the towns that the ministries are having. I mean, the local authorities are having money. They don't have.
No, they don't. I mean, that's when we're looking at things here, and what you hear, what it being promised, you kind of like, are you real? Are you?
Yeah.
Exactly what you're saying. When you said it's not gonna happen, you know? Yeah.
No.
Yeah, because you look at the reality as it's presented. As I said, number don't lie. So, and what are people? What is being promised?
Yeah, so them they are just saying no. Even now, you look at the local authority, for example, Windhoek Municipal here.
Yeah.
So if you are saying why put all over the world, even on all over the city, even on the suburb, there are potholes. Where the money is? He was telling you that no, to importing that electricity from South Africa, not from NamPower, from South Africa, the numbers are changing. So that is where we are end up now having problems, because we are not wanting this low shade to come in. That's why we are diverting all the money that side.
Mm.
So those are the things that we need to understand. And even the water is also scarce. It's very expensive for now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why you see water is now starting giving problems heavy. So even in Botswana, look at in Gauteng, where they are wanting also to get water from Orange River. It's not a joke, that one. It's something that can happen soon. So those are the type of things I'm saying. Even the water, maybe they are very expensive from NamPower. And NamPower is also, NamWater is also harvesting. So there are a lot of the chemicals into changing those things. So that is, you cannot blame in the idea of that ministry to say why you are using up money for buying chemicals. But what if you didn't buy chemicals? Some of the location will not get water. So, I don't understand. And then this approving of public projects that are not benefiting anything is a problem. And also the issue that Mandume raising to say why we invest in 7 billion on Nagatra Dam and then it's not giving money. That is not a problem of the ministries. No. Or cabinet to approving that project. No, it's us who are not wanting to participate in agriculture. So it's not broken. We don't have people that is really serious with agriculture.
Yeah, yeah.
So the land is there, the water is there, but we don't want to go that side. So who's the fault is that now? We are investing. It's the same thing of this green scheme. It's not that the original plan is the one that is failing the people. Failing the green scheme. No, it's our people. So those are the things I'm saying. Yeah, no, we withdraw some of these statements. If you don't have anything to say, keep quiet so that the people will not know what is going on in your administration. Yeah. So that is also something that is saving you. But for this reason of saying, Namibia doesn't have money, and it's not making money even. So that is another issue. Look at the profitable opportunity that we are having in this country. There are a lot that you can be making millions of dollars.
Exactly.
So then don't buy a case in Europe. Buy deep water. 16.5 meter. Deep. Deben Harbor is 12.5, and it was artificial. But you cannot take up the opportunity to invest in that and putting up good infrastructure on your harbor so that you can save in Southern Africa. So those are the things that I'm saying. No, we are learning this country with politics, but we don't really trying to be a profitable active. So those are the issues that we are having in this country. So we need to understand. Now we are challenging by finishing money, you're starting to blame others. So, Mike, thank you for the idea. But you cannot blame others for your failure. No. The money is not there.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's very true.
Yeah, you have money. In Namibia, as I said, they were supposed to be making that uranium maturity product so that they can add the value on it. You are running it as like a new product that is coming in 1979. It's long back.
Yeah.
Make it maturing.
And how long we are running those mines? Actually, 70 years or 60 years. 70 years.
You see now.
Yeah.
But you are not telling people that, no, this is a maturing product. It cannot be exported anymore with low grade. No. We have to come up with processing things.
Yeah.
So if you don't want, you leave it. You are already making money. Namibia, those companies, they make millions of dollars. If you look at Rio Tinto, why is a draw? Because of Kutamo.
Yeah, of course.
It didn't go because he said, I'm full. I'm full. I don't want anymore. I'm giving others chances to. It's the same what we are giving opportunity to each other to call on. So that is where the problem is. Sit down, discussing things that is making millions of dollars. And these jailers must also go out. When the project, you know, is making millions of dollars, some of this, we are killing the project. I hear now this new project that is the, what the feedlot thing.
Yeah.
In Hobabas, they learn out of product already. They don't have product to feed those cattle that they are getting in Hobabas. So what is now your use? That's why I'm saying you review something because it's for your friend, you let it go through. Mike, it's fine.
No, thanks, man. Thanks for coming through this morning.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Away 0833-66091, 31 minutes, it's past in the hour of 9. So, and we go up to 10. So, yeah. The truth is that Namibia does not lack policies. We don't lack policy. We have many well-written law strategies, you know, and development plans. Well, probably just getting them from GDP, GDP as well, or copying, you know. Maybe that's the problem. So, the challenge has often been, you know, turning those plans into actions. You know, too often the gap is not, it's not planning but implementation. I think that's the problem. Not in promises, but in follow through, and not in setting target, but in holding people accountable for meeting them. I think that's a big issue. Until that changes, even the biggest, even if you have the best reform, it risks becoming a little more than words on the paper. Okay? So the success of this new approach will depend really on one thing above all else, you know, accountability. Not that government say it will do, but what it actually delivers. All right. I miss you. So you may call back as well. 0833-66. So please, you may call back. I miss your call. All right. Maybe a few questions that we that help us also looking at this. That we can. You know, some important questions that help us to look at this as a national conversation. Very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, Dr. Mike.
Yes.
You know, this issue of saying you don't have money, that's the problem there. Because even though if you go to municipality to ask for, you know, location which are there for a long time, for 20, 15 years, they'll tell you we don't have money. I don't believe that story is true. Listen, countries which are doing well today, they just focus on three things. Number one, agriculture.
Yeah.
Number two, the sea is well controlled. Number two. Number three, tourism sector is well controlled and the country is doing well. Besides, you add the petrol, you add the uranium, you add the diamond. They don't even work with diamonds. Only three things which are they are doing well. And what are we waiting for? Listen, this issue is the one which are killing, putting us to go back. When you go there, they tell you we don't have money. Then we don't want what to say. We have money. These things we don't. No. I don't want to believe that we don't have money. We have money unless we don't know how to control our money. I followed yesterday the issue of Katengurari, saying like the stadium which they need to develop in Kurekuru, there was not in the proper standard. And think about the stadiums. I think in the how many regions we do have 14, something like that. And you divide the stadiums, and you think about, okay, one stadium will cost you 25 million, and the money which are given there is 140 million. So now think about who's pulling who there. You know, listen, unless we should sit and see where are we doing wrong, so we can pick capitalize on our things which are we are not doing it well.
In a way, I agree with you in terms that if we have abandoned agricultural land that we are not utilizing, that's money wasted. If we have uranium, that's money. If we have diamond, that's money. All the resources that we have that are only potential or owned by foreigners, that's money. Yeah.
I don't know. Go on. Yes, the guy. Yes, fine. You can go on. Say, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yes. You are right. You are right, Adamai.
So by saying that we just don't know how, we are not just trying to get the best of out of our resources. You're mm-hmm. absolutely right that we are rich enough to be able to do whatever we want. It's just that we are probably dumb enough in the way where we are doing things at the moment. You know
that the magnet in the parties in our party where I am or whatever, I don't know where but my brother you are, but we don't have a fixed position to say you are there forever. No,
yeah,
you are there. If you don't deliver, we'll remove you from this, and then we vote somebody else to go in there. So now, if you go there, you should deliver accordingly. Now think about the past. What did the Ministry of Agriculture did to our country? While we are buying, pulling out a lot of money to buy food out of the country, while we have land open without any production going on.
Yeah.
Then you say don't have money. No, we have money unless we don't know how to control our system. We should really, really see how can you control our system. Well, but you know, we have countries which are so poor, they cannot even gain $2 through their tourism sector. While we have we make almost like four billions a year.
Yeah.
And no. Really, this issue to say don't have money is a problem we have in the municipality. Shaga wa yakui, they will tell you, my brother, oh, 20 million, we don't have money. Then you don't know what to say. And you, after a few months, you had the malls being opened which are costing 2 or 5 billions. No. Yeah. Money we have, unless we should just sit and relax, see, how can we help our people to get, especially when it comes to us, my brother? House is the problem. Just think about a person you are in Namibia since independence, but you're still living in a shack. When you go to a toilet, you need to knock somebody to come out for you to go in. There's no peace there. Now, when you come to this radio, like now, I'm here, or wherever you go, sometimes you argue and not argument issues because you are already boiling like a pot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, all right. Let's see others if they are coming through. Yeah.
All right.
Mm. All right. 083-333-6091. Yeah, just to end this, Prime Minister's, maybe things that we need to think of, discuss on our own, really ponder on this. Few questions. Now, I'm asking, can a government realistically save 2.3 billion every year for the next 3 years without affecting essential services? Can we do that? Because that's what, you know, the saving that he's talking about. Can we save 2.3 billion every year for the next 3 years without affecting essential services? I don't think so. You know, if so, where exactly would those savings come from? Where would be the saving come from? Let's think about what has been spoken about, you know, and ask that question. What specific result will the eight pilot ministries, what specific result will the eight pilot ministry be expected to deliver? What are they expected to deliver? How will success be measured? Those need to be very clear. And will this target be made public so that the citizen can track progress for themselves? We need to track the progress. So lawmakers, wherever, those are the things that we need to ask. Yeah? Number three, what will happen if a ministry fails to meet its target? Okay, if the ministry failed now to meet its target, will there be real consequences and accountability? Eh? Or will poor performance simply be highlighted without any meaningful action, you know, being taken? Maybe you just replace this ED, you just reshuffle, you know the reshuffling that is normally done. What will be the consequences? What will be the real consequences and accountability? Will there be really consequences and accountability? And how will government then stop developing funds from being redirected to cover everyday expenses? As we were talking earlier on, what practical safeguard will be put in place to ensure money meant for the road, for the school, for the clinics, and for water project is used for the purpose, for those purposes? How, what is the, you know, your practical safeguard? And lastly, with global tensions continuing to create economic uncertainty, you know, is this budget strong enough really to handle further shocks? Is it strong enough? If fuel prices rise again, you know, trade routes are disrupted as we see, and global growth is slowed down. Does government have a backup plan? Really, do they have a backup plan? Or could another major crisis actually place even greater pressure on the country's finance? If just something major happened again, so what would happen? And these are not just questions for political, for politicians and policymakers. They are questions for all Namibians. Because the answers will help determine whether this budget delivers really improvement in people's lives, or whether the country faces even greater financial challenges, you know, in the years ahead. That's a challenge. All right? That's the keys. All right, after this, I'm going to be wrapping up what I started yesterday on the housing, the key, the pathway, the five pathways out of Namibia's housing crisis. Let's have a caller quickly, and then we get into that. Good morning.
Yes, Dr. Michael, just a minute.
A quick one, eh? Because I wanted to put something please.
Okay, yeah. You see that mic, ma'am? I know... what did the minister, Prime Minister say? But sometimes I think it's very doable.
What yeah, no, no. It is doable.
Yeah, because if you look there,
it is doable. But it is doable. Yeah. But sometimes you're looking at what faces you, what face you in your face. You know,
in the reality,
realistically, at that point where we are, can this be done? That's the question. You know.
It can be done because some of these unnecessary workshops even they are doing where people are going for vacation. It doesn't work. They are just claiming for the, their own S&T.
But those are some of the things where you need to make decisions that to get things in motion, isn't it?
Mm.
So if you then have to come up when you don't, let's say for example, when you don't have a facility, a tool that facilitate that meeting without meeting, you know, in a boardroom.
Person.
Then you have to do it. You understand? Because there are decisions that need to be made.
The tools are there, Mike. Tools are there. You know, for Zooming, and the people can just be where they are in their workplace, where they are just watching those Zooming.
SMT,
we are cutting the SMT. That is what I mean.
Oh, SMT.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a doable language. We cut off the SMT unnecessary traveling. Then we spend a lot of money in that.
Unless we change the system.
The system is there. Only the people they want to travel, just imagine. Sometimes even we heard that they are traveling, just imagine a Prime Minister going to the north, the Deputy President is going to the north, but they are traveling on their own different cars.
They are going plane,
but they are drivers.
That's not even worse. You have maybe there is a workshop of civil servant whatever government officials taking place in Katima, and you have people coming from Kirkmansworth and from, you know, Carasburg, and you know traveling to Katima. You understand? People coming from the north or poor traveling to Katima. All of them are going there. Eh? Imagine the distance.
The cost of accommodation.
The
SMPs. That is what we need to cut off.
The question is, Vandume, who has the power now to say, Avakwe, inimayopo ya kala ndishi, o system oyopo ya kala oyo kuchasho, so hatu ningingao, olie nengo no kuchoshima, shina shishenji.
Prime Minister.
So,
that's the issue. Then you zoom, then the other people listen, Over the gate, my very when you're meeting at that beginning hour, now very good, or Kogati Mamuriro. Then it's done. Without even you to travel to come to window or whatever.
Oh, Kalo, it walk Korea? I can't foot on me, and the can't foot on me, she got on
it. Uno salary up, Uno salary in your up on night.
What they said, you know, the civil servant, what they said, but the bigger one, they do that as well. They traveling, they even getting more SMTs.
If you even listen to the testimony of Bernard Desau, he's saying SMTs more than even what he's getting.
Exactly. You know, that's a issue.
Then now, how can the government have money if the money is wasted in the SMT?
All right, man. Let's
get okay, sharp man. Sure.
Great.
All right.
All right. Okay. Let me get to the whole issues that we were looking at yesterday. So as I said, there was I'm just bringing out so that you can evaluate that yourself and actually see what. Okay. I'm probably not gonna take a call anymore just to get this done. Yesterday, I looked at that. We're looking at this. These are five. What is that? Our five pathways that would help us actually getting out of this housing crisis. We looked at yesterday at pathway number one, upgrading informal settlement. That means that's. What it means is that you don't, you know, with this one, what has been proposed is that instead of demolishing informal settlement and starting all over again, the idea is to improve them gradually, one step at a time, with the resident helping to lead the process. So, and then that we have an example of the Shack Dwellers Federation of Namibia has spent years helping community actually save, organize themselves, and build a better, better housing. So, and we have also Human Housing Action Group also have been involved in terms of what they do, reblocking. What that means is that a way of rearranging shacks and plot to that, to allow road, water, pipe, sewage system, and electricity that, so that it can reach more homes safely and effectively. So now the research also talks about now something called a pre-allocation and reception area. Now, that's that means before you can build a house, you need a land. So the problem is that getting a land allocated can take years, as we know, as we experience that. So why not identify areas where people can now move into a basic serviced plot sooner and then improve and build their home over time, and the same thinking applies to a new housing development. So instead of waiting years for a fully completed house, people could actually receive a plot in a planned neighborhood and gradually build and expand as their finance improved. All right, so that was so the message here was like, don't wait for the perfect solutions. The government shouldn't wait for the perfect solution. Start with what people have, give them land, basic service, and support. So, and allow community now to grow and improve step by step. So that was, yeah. So, and then you have state, the pathway to is state supported housing. And this is actually the mass housing things, the mass housing program that we talked about. So the idea is before anyone can build a house, they need a land. Built but serviced land. You understand? Land without land with roads, water, sewage, electricity. You know, these are expensive. So in many cases, that is the biggest obstacle, not to have, not the house itself. For most people, it's not the house itself. Those services are the most problem. So the proposal is for government now to focus on servicing the land first. Once the infrastructure is in place, families can get access to plots and build their own home step by step as their finances allows, you know, like that. So, and then there's another idea of helping people improve the community where they already live. So instead of moving families out of informal settlement and relocating them somewhere else, government subsidies could be used to upgrade those settlements where they are, you know? And that means better road, better services, and better living condition without forcing people to leave the communities they have built over many years, you know? So the thinking behind of this is actually straightforward. If you can make land more accessible and improve existing communities, we may be able to help far more families than by forcing only on building fully completed houses. You know, that's the. And then now, the third, the pathway three. So this is where we're supposed to start today. This is giving now people security over land they live on. So now here's something we do not talk about, I think, in this country nearly enough. So you can have a house, you can have a roof over your head, but if you do not legally, and this is what we were talking about yesterday, if you do not legally own the land, you know, where you are, or have a secure right to stay there, you know, your future is always uncertain. Yeah, your future is always uncertain. Now, think about it. So if you do not have proof that the land is yours, you cannot easily use it to, you cannot use it to get a loan, for example. You may struggle to pass it on to your children, because you there is no proof that you have. And there is always the worry that one day, you know, you could be told to move. So in some... In some settlement, it's already there's written move, you know. So and that's why ISUD now is saying Namibia need to speed up the process of giving people legal ownership document, including title deeds, where possible. Need to speed it up. The goal is very simple, as they put it. So give people proof that that land belongs to them. That land belongs to them. So, but the reality is that getting a full title deed can be expensive, complicated, and time, you know, consuming as well. So we have seen in all that in many number of town councils, so especially in informal settlements. So now there is where now this the flexible land tenure system comes in. Okay. Now, it's in simple terms, it is a faster and a more affordable way of giving people legal right to the land they occupy. You know, well, it doesn't require all the paperwork and costs that come with the traditional title deed. So, but it still gives a resident a level of security and recognition. So ISUD now believes that this system should be strengthened and expanded across the country so that more people can benefit from it. So the research suggests other options as well. For example, such as certificate of occupancy and lease agreement. So this may not be like a full ownership, but they still give people some kind of a legal protection and the right to stay where they live. So, and the same applies to renters. Okay, the same applies to renters. People who are who rent homes should also have legal protection. Yeah, should have legal protection so that they can they cannot simply be forced out without notice or due process, and which sometimes happen to people who are renting. So that also there's also suggestions because at the end of the day, security tenure is about much more than a paperwork. It's about confidence. When people know they have a secure right to live somewhere, it doesn't matter whether you're renting or so, they are more likely to actually invest in their own homes, They fix things. They improve their properties. They plant gardens. Yeah? They build proper toilets. So they make their neighborhood better places to live in. But if you are constantly worried that you could lose your home or your land, why would you spend your hard-earned money improving it? You know, and that is the thinking behind this pathway. Give people security and they will have a reason to invest in their future. So now let's look at pathway four. This is rental housing now. Okay. This has been, you know, now let's talk about something. And this is something most young Namibians actually know very well, you know, paying rent. Okay. Not even only young Namibians. Many people actually know it very well. For many people, owning a house is simply not an option right now. Many people in Namibia, 70% of the population, owning a house is not an option right now. So renting is the only choice, okay? So the problem is that rent is becoming increasingly expensive. So, and of course, you know that. Why? Because supply and demand, yeah. So a two-bedroom flat costs more than 7,000 a month. For many families, that's a huge part of their income. Yeah. For a low-income household, it's simply unaffordable. It's simply unaffordable. Now, that is why now, ISUT now, so the institute say, Namibia need to take a rental housing much more seriously. It's something also, Dr. Omu Kakuyaha also mentioned in an interview that I have with him. One proposal is social renting housing. Okay? In simple terms, these are a renter home that receive government support so that rent can be kept at a level, at levels ordinary family can actually afford. You understand? So that's a proposal, and the research also say we need more private rental housing. Right now, there simply aren't enough affordable rental option available, which pushes people prices extra supply and demand. Another interesting idea is housing specifically for government employees. If teachers, nurses, police officers, and other public servants had access to affordable renting housing, because some people actually are coming from, they are in Windhoek, but they are from Rundu, they are from Kidmanstorp, you know? So, and if public servant had access to affordable renting housing, let's say for government housing, it could reduce its pressure on the private renter market. You understand? And provide more stability for workers who serve our communities. Hmm? So, now, the institute also points to something called rent-to-own housing, which I think it's a very, very, very brilliant idea. I know it's being done in some areas, in some countries. The idea is quite simple. Instead of paying rent month after month with nothing to show for it, part of your monthly payment goes towards eventually owning the property. It's like someone who on Dashingo taxi, you know? So, mokwishingamo or tifutuko until it becomes his. So, over time, you are not just renting a home. you are actually working towards becoming a homeowner. So for many families who cannot qualify for, let's say for instance, the person cannot qualify for mortgage, if you cannot qualify for mortgage today, this could provide actually a pathway into home owning or home ownership. So, and then there's one, the role of employers. So there's also a role of employers. So the research suggests that that business could help by providing housing for their workers. So whether it's mining companies, farmers, farms, factories, or other large employers, so worker housing can make a bigger difference. You know, it gives employee stability, reduced transport costs, you know, and it takes some of the pressure off the national housing system as well. So the message behind this pathway is straightforward. Not everyone can buy a house today, as we know from statistics and data, but everyone deserves a safe and affordable place to live. So expanding rental option could help thousands of families while they work towards owning a home in the future. So, good morning. You have 1 minute.
Thank you, Ademek, when you will get one of the members who are doing in this issue of the Shagdwa Federation, ask them a question to say, people who have been part of this system since 2010, yeah, up to date, some already been even died already, and some are still trying, some lose even hope on this issue. What is the problem in Windhoek? Why you guys don't even do as you are doing in Oshakati and other towns as well? They will give you the expression. I can even send you some papers from 2010 up to date. They are still waiting for that list. Nothing is going on in Windhoek. You're only in Oshakati, in Rundu, and whatever. And I don't know why. And the other issue, you know, my brother Mandume, he mentioned about the traveling of whatever. We are talking about, let us open up. If we don't move, we won't learn. So now, if you want to close our leaders to not move because they are wasting money, then yeah, let us close our hotel. Let us close our hotel because we don't need any more people. You don't want people to move. Why? That is a problem there. You want to learn, but you don't want to go and see yourself how the other people are doing. This SNT is not a problem. The problem is just how you control it. Because if you don't want people to move, how do you open a hotel in Oshakati? For who to sleep there? Yeah. That is the problem there. We should really carefully to not influence wrong narrative for people to think about maybe the SNT is a problem. It's not a problem. Just control it well. We are opening our hotel in Africa because of people are coming from Europe to come and visit in our hotel. They are paying SNT from their countries to come and visit us. That's why we are employing our kids in those who failed grade 10, grade 11, grade whatever. They are there in the hotel. They are waiters, they are chefs, and they are cleaners. And they are making money. After 10 years, they can send their kids to school from today on. After 11 years, those kids are teachers, are lawyers, or whatever.
All right, then.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. And pathway five, okay? All right. So pathway five, housing and finance. Now, let's talk about money now here, because at the end of the day, housing is not just about bricks and land. You know, it's also about how people pay for a home. Now, when most people think about buying a house, they think about mortgage. You know, you go to the bank, apply for a loan, buy a house, and then spend the next 20 or 30 years actually paying it off. Now, the problem is that this system only works for people who meet the bank's requirement. You understand? So for many Namibians, especially those on a very low incomes, you know, that simply isn't possible. They don't earn enough to qualify for a mortgage. So even if they desperately need a home, you know, majority of people are in that box. And that's when the institute say you know, the issue, say Namibia need to look beyond traditional bank loans. They need to look beyond traditional bank loan. So one opinion is public-private partnership, where government and private companies work together. So the idea is that government provide the land and basic infrastructure such as road, water, and electricity. Private developers then build the house, you know, build the houses. In theory, this can speed up housing delivery because government and the private sector each bring something valuable to the table. But the Institute also raised an important warning. Now, the warning is that housing project cannot succeed. This kind of thinking of this way, this pathway cannot succeed if the people they are meant to help, if the people you are meant to help simply cannot afford the final product. So if you build the house too expensive and the people that you meant to help cannot afford it, then it doesn't work. So no matter how efficient a developer is, the numbers will not work if a family do not have the income to pay for the houses. So affordability has to remain at the center of any housing plan. So the government also announced plan to build more than 5,000 affordable houses and reduce the growth of infill settlements. So that sounds like a positive step. It sounds like a positive step. But when you compare 5,000 houses to a housing backlog of more than 300,000 units, it becomes clear that much more will be definitely be needed. So the real question is this the start of a long, you know, how would I say, long-term effort to tackle the housing crisis at scale in this way, or will it be another promise that grabs headlines, you know, it grabs headlines today, and then it's forgotten tomorrow. So that's normally what we used to, something that grabbing headline today, but that tomorrow. So it's gone. So because I think solving Namibians' housing crisis, I think require more than a few thousand houses. It will require a sustained commitment year after year, you know, year after year. A sustained commitment. Until that gap between housing demand and housing supply finally begins to close. Once that happens, I think that, yeah. So just to round up quickly before I hand over to Tate France. So we talked about the, you know, we have this, how would I put this? Now, when we look at all these five, why all five pathway matters, they are not competing solutions, okay? They are not competing solutions. They need to work together, I think, in my opinion. But there is something that concerns me. So we have heard ambitious, you know, housing promises before, you know? The mass housing program was supposed to transform the housing sector. It did not deliver the result many people hoped for. So the flexible land tenure system has existed for years, yet progress has been slower than many expected. Meanwhile, the Shack Dwellers, the Shack Dweller Federation has also shown that community-led housing can work, often with far fewer resources actually than the large government programs that you have on an NHG, for example. So perhaps the real challenge is not knowing what needs to be done. Perhaps the real challenge is whether we have the commitment, the capacity, and the accountability to actually get it done. Some of you mentioned that as you called. Do we have the commitment, the capacity, and the accountability to actually get it done? Because plan on paper do not build houses, you know, policy do not house families. Implementation definitely does. And I think that's a way to go. That's why I said I think the challenge is whether we have the commitment, the capacity, and the accountability to actually get it done, to implement it. All right. So that was on the paper on Monday. That was actually stored in the paper on Monday, so that we couldn't finish it yesterday. So, all right, make sure that you go to, it's a front page, stories, and get more information on that. And also, we also looked at what today's, front page today's story in the Villager. So make sure you subscribe. And I'm going to leave you in the hand before he really, said you're going too far now. So, so I'm going to leave you in a good hand, capable hand of Mbarangaja. So coming up, that's the difference from coming up with Kufamosha from Windhoek side. So from me, let's do this again next time until tomorrow. So let's do this tomorrow again. For me, it's a goodbye for now. All right.